and it is available right now. Gary has said that the DVDs are ready to ship. The books are ready to ship. That means you're going to get it right away. And also, we're really encouraging you to get this for not only yourself, but get another one as a gift. That would be a $270 contribution. And you put on your credit card, make payment arrangements. The music, that means I got to get out of here. I'm Christine Blasdale. I want to thank Michael G. I want to thank all of you for calling up right now. The phone lines are really, really busy. So please be patient. Stay tuned. Keep those calls coming in, though. Don't forget, this offer is really, really important. You don't want to let it go away. 516-620-3602. Stay tuned for more Fun Drive programming coming your way right here. Don't go anywhere else.
Hey, Tom Hartman here. WBAI is important. Radio for the 99%. Unlike commercial radio, WBAI does not have rich corporations as sponsors, no deep well of corporate support to keep them on the air. But they do have something better. You, the listeners and members of WBAI. You are our sponsors and our community. WBAI can't do it without you. Please help keep this honored and beloved station on the air. You won't find movement politics and social justice anywhere else on the radio. We can't do this without you. I'm here for you. WBAI is here for you. Please donate now. Go to give2wbai.org with the digit 2 in there. Give2wbai.org.
Tune in evenings at 5 p.m. for Tom Hartman on WBAI.
Thank you.
Celebrating the 100th anniversary of the birth of writer, politician, and founding father of the Negritude movement, Amin Césaire, poet leader that lit the fire of Africa, director Rico Spate and his amazing cast will bring Césaire's seminal piece of political theater, A Season in the Congo, to a new audience at the La Mama Theater, 74 East 4th Street in the East Village section of Manhattan. From December 19th to the 22nd, A Season in the Congo chronicles the rise and fall of Patrice Lumumba, the first prime minister of the newly independent Republic of Congo in the year 1960. Get your tickets by pledging to WBAI today. For more information about tickets and showtime, go to WBAI.org.
We're so divided. We live in a very divided country. Like, it's crazy.
America is a fundamentally good country. We have good people with good values who want to do the right thing.
We often get on with the job. We don't always talk about it as much as men.
But the structures of power that exist are working to their own ends.
We have to learn to put up with the fact that some people say things that we don't like.
All you can hope is that they die and leave you a tremendous amount of money.
Stop trying to force a government shutdown.
It does not have to happen.
Let it end! Please!
That's not going to happen.
We live by one rule and one rule only. Never again will we allow ourselves to be put in such a position.
Tune in for A Shortcut, 11 p.m. New Year's Eve, right here on WBAI-FM.
All of this is entirely preventable.
I swear it by the old gods and you.
Christ 13.
Little girl, why are you so sad? It's almost time for Christmas.
My family doesn't celebrate Christmas.
Oh, Jewish?
Uh-uh.
Muslim?
Uh-uh.
Buddhist?
Nope. My family doesn't practice any religion, and we don't believe in things that are supernatural.
But haven't they heard? There are many ways to enjoy and celebrate Christmas that are completely naturalistic.
Really?
Really! And this Christmas, they can learn all about having a perfectly wonderful naturalistic Christmas on Equal Time for Free Thoughts Naturalistic Christmas Special.
Naturalistic Christmas Special?
That's right!
When?
From 3 to 5 on Christmas Day.
3 to 5 Christmas Day!
Right here on 99.5 WBAI.
Hi, I'm Midong Tang.
And I'm Jale Afshar, and we're members of Asia Pacific Forum, broadcasting Monday nights from 9 to 10 p.m. on WBAI 99.5 FM. I am pleased to announce the return of our classic Fun Drive number, 212-209-2950.
That's 212-209-2950.
Over the years, WBAI has offered you, the listeners, memberships to WBAI. You are our primary sponsors.
You provide the bulk of our funding to keep the signal on the air.
By calling 212-209-2950, you may ask the WBAI pledge representative what gifts are available with your pledge of support.
Again, that number is 212-209-2950.
Donate today and help keep this honorable and beloved WBAI institution on the air.
The WBAI Community Advisory Board will be holding open meetings at the station's office at 388 Atlantic Avenue in Brooklyn every Sunday throughout the month of December. These meetings will begin at 1 p.m. and will include discussions of the latest developments concerning the lease management agreement issue and your idea on programming. The meetings will be on every Sunday in December starting at 1 p.m. Again, WBAI's Community Advisory Board will be holding meetings at 388 Atlantic Avenue at 1 p.m. on each Sunday in December at the WBAI office at 388 Atlantic Avenue in Brooklyn starting at 1 p.m. Expect to work and help with the station needs. With your help, we will get through this. All are welcome and invited to come and participate.
Yes, indeed. 12:03.
Actually, so this is Chris.
Yeah, thank you, Johnny. 12:04. You're tuned to listener-sponsored, non-commercial WBAI New York, 99.5 on the FM dial, and streaming live at WBAI.org. We'll recue that. And ordinarily at this time, you'd be hearing Earthwatch with Robert Knight. And I don't know. I have apparently missed a communique from somewhere, as our programming tends to shift on a moment-by-moment basis during the fun drive. So while I attempt to make contact with anyone who might know what is actually supposed to be on the air right now, we're going to listen to some seasonal music. Oregano, mustard, seasonal music.
So this is Christmas, and what have you done? Another year over, and a new one just begun. And so this is Christmas, I hope you had fun. The near and the so happy Christmas. Fall back and for white, for yellow and red one. Let's stop all the bad. A very Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. Let's
the night before Christmas, went all through the house. Not a creature was stirring, not even a mouse. My baby came home, I asked her where she was. She grinned and said that she was out of with the whole Santa Claus. This trouble brewing now. Oh, oh, yeah, well, this trouble brewing now. Oh, oh, yeah. The snow is white, so crisp and white. But this trouble brewing tonight. 12:30, I'm a feeling low. I'm a waiting for this cat who said my baby's hot to go. From what I hear, he's a dressing red. He's a coming down my chimney. That's what my baby said. Oh, 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 there's a trouble brewing now. Oh, oh, oh yeah, well, hell, there's trouble brewing now. Oh, 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 yeah. He don't know fear. He don't dig fear. But he has a Nixon and a Pixin Les. I'll disappear. Creep to my window, I'm there in the sky. I see this cat, he's a flying by. He circled my path, I think he's a goof. Cause with eight reindeer, he tried to land on my roof. Oh, there's trouble brewing now. Oh, 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 yeah, well, there's trouble brewing now. Oh, 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 yeah. The snow is white, so crisp and white. But there's trouble brewing tonight. There's trouble brewing tonight. There's trouble brewing tonight. There's trouble brewing tonight.
Some people use the wrong way, wrong way, wrong way. Some people use the wrong way to celebrate Christmas Day. On the 25th of December, 1928, is a national issue of heaven to the world that is Jesus' birthday. Some people use the wrong way, wrong way, wrong way. Some people use the wrong way to celebrate Christmas Day. Some people work every day and draw good money. Every pen, here's what the same people say. I'm gonna spend my money and have my way. Some people use wrong way, wrong way, wrong way. Some people use wrong way to celebrate Christmas Day. While the church is praying on Christmas Day, other people are roaming the streets and drinking their soul away. Some people use wrong way, wrong way, wrong way. Some people use wrong way to celebrate Christmas Day. Some people use wrong way, wrong way, wrong way. Some people use wrong way to celebrate Christmas Day.
Oh, my friend.
for simply having a wonderful Christmas time. Simply having a wonderful Christmas time. The word is out about the town, so lift your glass.
And once again, this is WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org on the web. And we have on the line no other than Gary Noe. Hello there, Gary.
Hi, nice to be with you today. And I want to thank the people on WBAI for listening in for this hour. We're beginning today's program by revisiting a topic that so quickly we forget. We've just had the 50th anniversary of the assassination of John F. Kennedy. And for the vast majority of people in the media, they talk about where they were at on that day and how it impacted them, how they felt. There have been more than 600 scholarly books written on the topic, thousands of articles. Many are pure fantasy. They're speculating that it was the Russians and others that was the Cubans and Fidel. Others, rogue elements of the CIA that were angry because JFK abandoned them on the beaches and didn't send in the aerial support at the Bay of Pigs. What is the truth? We decided nearly a year in advance, the scholars and residents in my office and myself, to do everything we could to find the truth, to make it a meaningful discussion. We had no idea where this would lead us once we began. Thousands of hours later, each of us, doing our research, we finally put together a mosaic of the truth. And it's only on WBAI that this information is being shared. Only here. So you won't hear this anywhere else, just here. And here is the truth of it. We couldn't do it in 1 hour. It required an in-depth analysis, 7 hours, 8 hours. And we vetted everything, meaning we allowed nothing to be presented unless a person could prove with evidence substantial enough to withstand cross-examination in a court of law. Therefore, our information in these 8 CD, not DVD, CD set for $75, a remarkably low price, you could present any of this information under cross-examination and you would not be able to have it dismissed, nor a summary judgment throwing it out. That's how good the evidence is. So what is the evidence? What are these different pieces of this puzzle, this mosaic? There is James Douglas. He is a respected author of JFK and the Unspeakable. And that was the basis of Oliver Stone's film, JFK, why the CIA and the Pentagon wanted to rid America of JFK. There is Judith Baker. So much new information that we never knew that contradicts everything that was set up to make Lee Harvey Oswald the patsy. She was his former mistress. They were going to get married. She met all the insiders that we were told didn't know each other, that Jack Rubin and Guy Bannister, they knew each other, that Jack Rubin and Lee Harvey Oswald knew each other. All these people knew each other. No one knew this. And who was their CIA handler? He had been misidentified. All these years, we have found out who he is. She told us. She was working on super secret information in a secret laboratory with three outstanding physician scientists, as she was one of these prodigy scientists who had come up with a way of finding a cancer that would kill quicker. She thought it was a good thing because then they could find drugs to stop fast and aggressive cancers from killing people. Little did she know that her work, her research, would be used as a way of killing Fidel Castro. And Lee Harvey Oswald played a role in that, taking the vial, 10 cc's, of this progenitor for rapidly growing cancer to a contact in Mexico City, who was then taken into Cuba. As it turns out, the man didn't show up. How does a man go from being a defector into Russia and then back and be allowed back in the United States? Not only was he allowed back, but it was Judith Baker who was there to show how the CIA's top man on this met them, got him their paperwork, so they got right back in. We also have Roger Stone, the former GOP campaign manager for Richard Nixon, who was sitting there with Nixon when the television was on and Jack Ruby was shown shooting Lee Harvey Oswald. You'll hear what Nixon said. This is the same Nixon who attended a meeting with J. Edgar Hoover and Lyndon Johnson and oil magnates in a home that two of our guests attended, where they talked about the assassination. Jesse Ventura, former governor of Minnesota, he has interesting insights. Robert Morningstar, former naval intelligence photo expert, probably the smartest man I've ever met on the subject, new forensic evidence. James Tagg, who spent 35 years doing research in this. Vince Palomara, the country's leading expert on the Secret Service. How could this have happened without the Secret Service being involved? He tells us. Also, John Hunt, the son of the CIA spymaster and Watergate burglar, Howard Hunt. Howard Hunt, on his deathbed, told his son, John, who told us who was involved, his involvement, the shooters, how they did it, why they did it, how they intended to cover up. You've never heard this before. We have Peter Janney, son of the CIA official Westar Janney, and the assassination of Mary Meyer. Who was Mary Meyer? She was JFK's favorite mistress. Oh, he had a lot, over 80. But this was the one that he was closest to. Why did they kill her? How did they get away with it? How would this never be able to get away with today? He goes into great detail. All these people are affiliated. Mary Meyer, it's her former husband. He was one of the heads of the assassination. So you're going to hear things that you've never heard before. Motive, J. Edgar Hoover, his complicity, the Secret Service, the CIA, the cover-up, getting rid of witnesses, why Johnson was behind it. This is a historic portrait of a major conspiracy and crime against humanity. And yet we don't have the confidence or courage in America, not one single major journalist, to take this on because they're afraid. This is the third rail. Well, we're not afraid. So we give you the truth, and only on WBAI, because this is the kind of progressive audience, critical thinking, people who want the truth, who can handle the truth, who are not afraid of it, who will listen. I can assure you, we have not just allowed anyone to come on and spout forth. In fact, the moment anyone begins to make a statement, if it's not backed up by facts, I stop them. I'm not interested in their speculation, subjective insight. I'm interested in what can be established and held as prima facie evidence in a court of law. Documents. Freedom of Information Act request. So we have it all, plus first person. You've never heard this before, anywhere. This is an exclusive. We know who killed JFK. I repeat, we know who killed John F. Kennedy. 8 hours, CD, $75, WBAI. Support the station that will allow this information. Now, you have not heard this because this was not broadcast on WBAI. This is all new insights. We recorded this over a period of time, nearly a year of in-depth research on this. That's a lot of hours when all the different people were involved, to make sure that we left nothing out and that we'd have every single part of this mosaic together. It's never been done before. This is historic. Give a call now to support WBAI. Give a call to support the truth. And that's what we're doing now. Over to you.
All right. The number is 212-209-2950. Once again, that number is 212-209-2950, so you can support this radio station. As Gary was mentioning before, you will not find or hear information like this other than WBAI. No other place but WBAI where you hear this information. 212-209-2950. And as I know that we've done a couple of weeks ago, when we dedicated a whole day on the 50th anniversary of the JFK assassination, such information you will not hear any place else but WBAI. So this is your chance and your opportunity to support this station, to support the information that has been providing you for over 50 years. In fact, January will be 54 years of giving you a perspective of a Pacific perspective here in New York City. 212-209-2950.
What's important is on the 50th anniversary, on one of the programs on Pacifica, there was Oliver Stone. And as an interview with him, it was fine. He made not a single new or revelatory insight. Not one. Now, mind you, he had interviewed Garrison, the DA from New Orleans, who had the truth, but not a single discussion of that. I did 12 hours of taped interview with Garrison. I got the truth from him. And all of the things that he said, all the documents that he had collected, he was fully aware that his office is infiltrated. He just didn't know who. Which agencies? It was the FBI and the CIA and National Security all had infiltrated his office, stealing documents, planning misinformation, trying to get his case against Shaw scuttled. Do you think it's by accident that three of the main characters who were all associated with Garrison and who all could put the blame where it belonged were all killed, naked, bodies mutilated in the same identical manner? Not by accident. And the reason I got some of this is because one of the people, the moment the assassination was in full force, she was given a call by Lee Harvey Oswald, who said, leave. Did you also know that they tried to kill JFK first in Miami, and that failed? And then they went to Chicago, and you know that they didn't get the chance to kill him in Chicago because of a person who interfered? Do you know who that person's name? Lee Oswald. Yeah. Do you know that there were multiple Lee Harvey Oswalds? Multiple ones. We have the story, the first-person account of someone who was in special forces, high-ranking, who was on, missed his flight, and had to take a military craft, and no one checked him, and he's in the back of the plane, and he sees a group of people come in, and see this guy, and it was Lee Harvey Oswald, one of them, and flew with this guy. And then it was, the plane was parked, and he heard the conversation, and then this Lee Harvey Oswald double got off. How many were there? What did this guy make of this? He didn't even know about any of this until we saw it on television. He thought, oh my God, I was on the private military plane with that guy out of Dallas. How did that happen? You see, we have pieces of the puzzle that you have not heard before, all from credible first-person witnesses. So give a call now. Give our number again, please.
Certainly, Gary. The number is 212-209-2950. Once again, that number is 212-209-2950. You're able to get this package here. Very interesting package indeed.
And it's done. It's ready to go. There's 8 CDs, beautiful artwork on it. And it's only $75. Normally, wow. this would be $150. Well, part of our new policy now, I want to thank Bertold Reimer. I want to thank Andrea Katz. I want to thank all the people on the local station board, Mitch Cohen, who understand not only do we need new and vital and strong and important and progressive programming on BAI, And we need good management without concern for their political ideology, but their capacity to run a radio station and work with people. But also the significance of making sure the premiums are gotten out in a timely fashion, that you don't leave the listener for last, their needs for last, and that you give a variety of premiums that meet the people's needs, and you make it at a price that people can afford. All that has been met. And by the way, I want to thank Mitchell Cohen. I want to thank the, I don't know how many, but I was told there were more than 15 volunteers. Plus, Berthold spent days and nights packing up over 4,500 premiums. There was 495 premiums at one time, then there was 1,500 premiums. And so, but they're all except for 180 premiums, from what I'm told, they are out the door. So 98% are now getting into people's homes. So we appreciate that they've taken the time to honor the audience. And I was told that within 48 hours, these premiums, We Know Who Killed JFK, 8-part CD series, will be shipped to people. That's what we were told. Who told me? Berthold Reimer, the station manager. And I'm sure that as an ethical and honorable person, he will honor his word, so you're going to get your premiums quickly. $75, and half that is a tax deduction, which means that you're really only paying about a little over $37 for this 8-part series. It took a year of research and preparation. I mean, there's a lot of scholarship in this. You have no idea how many people from different backgrounds. We looked at their information, and it didn't fit. They didn't have some of the evidence. They got part of it right and part of it wrong. For example, a lot of them got it right that Sam Giancana had been a part of the mob, yes, and that he hated Kennedy for good reason, and that he was set to be assassinated. He later was, but long before that, he was kidnapped. And who rescued him in a private plane? One of the guys who was a part of this, who was a friend of one of the people we interviewed, Judith Baker. She met with him. He was an extremely eccentric person, but very brilliant person. And he flew Giancana out of harm's way. He then was put in touch to work with his lawyer. So all these people had these connections that the world has never known until now. Never. In the Warren report, they said they said that Jack Ruby had not had a history in organized crime. We show all of his history in organized crime, that he didn't know Lee Harvey Oswald. We show that they knew each other and actually socialized together with the person who was there with them both. So this is a powerful indictment of our entire government, because the people who knew the truth were killed. Others who knew the truth were part of the conspiracy, and if you were powerful enough, you lived. If you weren't, then you were collateral damage after you had done your deed. You're not going to hear this or see this anywhere. So what I'd like to do now is I'd like to play some clips, short clips. We don't have a lot of time. We have about 38 minutes left. But let's play some clips. I want you to hear from some of the people. For example, I want you to hear from Judith Baker. And then I want you to hear from Vince Palamara. Those two are extremely interesting because no one knows the Secret Service as well as Vince. And also I want you to hear from St. John Hunt, E. Howard Hunt, of Watergate burglary fame, the son, and what his dad said on his deathbed, and the notes that he made that Hunt still has, but chose not to share them with the world out of fear. So we have all this information. This is irrefutable evidence. I had lawyers go over this and say, do you see any weakness in this 8-hour of cases? Do you see anything that could discredit this? And if there was any weakness, it was taken out. What we're left with is something that will withstand the test of time in any criticism. This isn't conspiracy theories 101. This is good journalism, the kind of journalism you expect on WBAI. Let's go to the tape now. Today, a conversation with a woman who knew Lee Harvey Oswald intimately and romantically in 1963. She is Judith Berry Baker. Nice to have you with us today, Judith.
It's good to be here. Thank you.
Let's begin with your relationship with Lee Harvey Oswald.
Well, Lee meant a great deal to me even from the beginning, because I once had a relationship of a more academic nature with an older man. His name was Knut Nicholson. He was a spy for in Hitler's underground. I learned a lot from him in the time I knew him, and I then began to admire spies. Upon meeting Lee, he exhibited all kinds of evidence that he had been a spy. It started with looking at his ring on his right hand. Most wedding rings are worn on the left hand, but not for people from the USSR or Hungary or other USSR captured countries at that time. I soon understood what kind of man he was, and he did tell me, and I would be like to share with you the information he gave me about his time in the USSR, for starters.
Fine.
Okay. Well, to begin with, Lee, right from the beginning, he actually did see the series I Led Three Lives. His brother Robert said he saw him in Texas, but Lee told me he saw them in New York, and he gave me the time schedule. To make a long story short, Lee had made contact with a customs officer at the border between Buffalo, New York, and Canada. His name was Charles Thomas, and through Charles Thomas, they let the boy across. He'd played hooky, and he wanted to sound so close to Canada. He was living in New York. He actually hitchhiked all the way when he was just 12 and a half, and crossed the border there, and this customs agent let him do it. And they became friends, and Lee was watching I Led Three Lives, Herbert Philbrick's series, where Philbrick is an FBI informant, but he's pretending to be a communist and has infiltrated Communist Party's blocks in New York. And this was made into a popular series. So Philbrick became the father image for Lee Oswald, whose father died before he was born. And he just vowed he was going to do the same thing. So when he met the customs officer, Charles Thomas, by the way, I know their family. I've met them, and we've verified all these connections. He wanted to find out what he could do to serve his country. He began reading Marx and Engels and all that stuff, but he also was reading Thomas Jefferson and Thomas Paine and Leviathan and Hobbes and so on. So, you know, the Warren Commission doesn't report all the things that he actually studied when he's that young. And he did fulfill his dream, because when he was 17, as soon as he was 17, he joined the Marines. He tried to join when he was 16. And he went to Atsugi eventually. That's in Japan, where they had the U-2 program and also training CIA agents. And ONI, this is really Office of Naval Intelligence, he said. And he said it was borrowed by the CIA from the Office of Naval Intelligence. Now, during his time of training in Atsugi, he prepared himself. And he would even say, he told me that nobody beat him up for calling, he called everybody comrade. They knew he was studying the Russian language and so on. We find that he gets on his, well, I want to make this first person. To make a long story short, Lee Oswald throws his passport down at the embassy, U.S. Embassy in Moscow. And if you did something like that today, say if you went to the embassy in Iraq and threw your passport down and said, I'm going to tell all the secrets I know about how to down a drone, and they let you walk out and go to Iran to tell the story, I don't think you would ever get out of the building. But according to the official version, Lee walks right out. He leaves his passport there. Almost 3 years later, he comes back, picks it up, comes home with a loan, and he told, here's a piece of new information. He wrote Governor, would be Governor Connally, but at that time he was Secretary of the Navy, complaining that he had been given an undesirable discharge. They had changed it after the fact because he didn't show up for reserves. He couldn't, of course, show up for reserves because he was a spy in the USSR. And he wrote the code word Hemingway in there. And this is because the new administration came along and he had been actually marooned in the USSR. Now, he had been forced to marry a very nice lady, a young woman, who was the way to call them a honeypot, because she was dating all these so-called defectors. there were real defectors to the USSR, and then there were fake ones like Lee, who were there to gather information. Lee had to pretend to be a terrible shot so he wouldn't be presumed to be a sniper who's going to go and kill somebody. And there are other ploys he put on. He knew a lot more Russian than he let on. And then he learned a lot more when he was there. He constantly studied Russian. I was with him personally when he would go through his Russian flashcards and at the university, the Tulane University listening room. I listened to him as he practiced his Russian to get a better accent because his was a Belarusian accent that he had learned in Minsk, there in Belarus, and that's not quite what they spoke in Moscow, so he was trying to improve his Russian, even in New Orleans. So anyway, he comes back to the United States with this Marina that he had to marry so he wouldn't get deported, and he got her pregnant, even though they were going to get a divorce, got her pregnant in the U.S. so that she'd have a baby, and after the divorce, she wouldn't be deported. That way he could keep his baby that was born in the USSR, and that baby's name was June Lee, and he'd be able to, of course, the other baby would be in the United States, and so they could divorce and they wouldn't be deported. So we're talking about a man who intended to leave his wife, and I was in an unhappy relationship myself with my former husband, and basically he abandoned me in New Orleans most of the time, most of the summer, during some very rough times that occurred. And Lee really came to my rescue. In fact, we now realize, although he never quite said it that way, he said, "I'm your protector," is what he told me. But, and then he said he was sent to New Orleans to spy on the program that we were working on, a biological weapons development program in order to kill Fidel Castro. The CIA has finally admitted they worked with the mafia, that they worked with other entities in order to devise various biological means to try to kill Castro so it wouldn't be, linked to anybody or to any attention from the United States. Now, Lee was a spy in this to try and make sure that this project wouldn't get into the wrong hands.
That's just some of what Judith Baker had to say. Needless to say, there's a whole hour of her where she goes into great depth about her research as a scientist, her having this long and intimate affair and with Lee Harvey Oswald, all the people they met, and then all the murders, the people that she worked with, and all the people who were part of the assassination that she also met. This is a part of an 8-part CD series, $75, going to WBAI. Please give a call. Reggie, the number, please.
The number is 212-209-2950. Once again, that number is 212-209-2950 to get this extensive JFK package here exclusively for WBAI. Once again, 212-209-2950.
Now we're going to our next clip. Lyndon Johnson, former president. Did he have the means? Did he have the motive? We're going to ask Roger Stone. Nice to have you with us today, Roger.
Great to be with you.
As heinous as the assassination was, we have to agree that it was a brilliantly planned and finely tuned exercise. And this includes the cover-ups after November 22nd and the assassinations and murders of many of the key figures connected with either the Kennedys or the parties behind the assassination during the aftermath. And just this alone should tell us that there was a great deal of time and effort and resources that had to go into setting up the entire strategy for getting rid of the president. So how do you feel the plan to assassinate Kennedy was put into effect and why? And you would have had to have dealt with J. Edgar Hoover, because even if you killed Kennedy without any complicit behavior by, let's say, any of the other federal agencies, the Secret Service would have found out, the FBI would have investigated, the CIA would have investigated, but they didn't.
That's because they would be investigating themselves. I mean, I think the preponderance of evidence is that this was something that was probably 2 years in the planning. Here's what we know. Bobby Baker, again, the man we just discussed, at JFK's 1961 inauguration. And I should intercede here that Lyndon Johnson blackmailed his way onto this ticket. Kennedy had picked Senator Stuart Symington. The deal was done. Johnson's relationship with Hoover was very close. They were neighbors, and Hoover had, and Johnson had delivered Hoover's budgets as the Senate Majority Leader, giving Hoover a vastly expanding amount of money to spend on his crusade against communism, and ignore the fact that Lyndon Johnson's friends in organized crime were making a lot of money. So they are very close. Hoover is facing mandatory retirement under the Kennedys. He knows when he hits his 70s that Bobby despises him. They think they laugh at him behind his back because he's a relic. The idea that there's no mob, but we should chase domestic communists by 1963 seems quaint almost. And he's looking, he has no interest in losing the kind of power base that he's built up. So I think that you're looking at something that where Johnson is the linchpin. He supplies because he controls the Dallas police and the sheriff's office and the prosecutor in the building through his friend, Mr. Byrd, and he has a shooter. I think the CIA is responsible for setting up Oswald is exactly what he was, a patsy, a fall guy, maneuvered into place. You can see voice stress analysis today. Technology didn't exist then. Show us that his statements in the police department are true. I didn't shoot anybody. I'm a patsy. Reporter, did you shoot the president? No, sir, I did not, says Oswald. So I believe that he's been maneuvered into place. His background as a communist is all a fabrication of the agency. We now know, in retrospect, that both the CIA and the FBI lied to the Warren Commission publicly about their knowledge of Oswald. Oswald was trained by the agency for a defector program. At least two major CIA officials and now retired have said that, Victor Marchetti and Robert Plumlee. He has also been a paid informant for the FBI. When Oswald is caught giving out pro-Castro flyers in New Orleans, gets into a fistfight, gets arrested, they take him to jail. He's got one phone call. Who does he call? Does he call his wife? Does he call his lawyer? No. Calls the head of the FBI in New Orleans, and an hour and 15 minutes later, he's released and the charges are dropped. So the government has a lot of interest in buttoning things up quickly, particularly Hoover, because as we can discuss later, Jack Ruby's also on the FBI payroll as a paid informant. FBI tells them they have no knowledge of him, and as you know, the Warren Commission says Ruby is not connected to organized crime in any way. That's a joke. That's an absurdity. Jack has run guns for Carlos Marcello to Cuba. Jack has worked in a Las Vegas casino for Marcello. Jack is running his strip club at the sufferance of Marcello. First of all, the CIA spends a lot of time and effort, and documents that were declassified in the late 90s showed that they were, in fact, paying people in the media to report the story the way they wanted to play it, and they were putting out talking points. So they infiltrate the mainstream media just to make sure that their spin is on this, and it's tamped down very tightly. What's amazing is that thanks to the Internet and radio programs like this one, that a majority of Americans realize that a conspiracy killed John F. Kennedy. You know, the super hardline Cold Warriors saw his campaign against Nixon in 1960, where JFK ran to Nixon's right. The missile gap, that's all about sending the boys in the defense contracting business a wink that you're going to keep spending. And they can back the Brinks truck right up to the ramp.
Hi, Vincent.
He called Nixon for not being aggressive enough about removing Castro. That's a signal to the CIA that you're down for assassination and or invasion. That's their agenda. JFK talks a hard line against the communists. And then when he opens the back door to negotiations with Castro through William Atwood, and he gets taken to the cleaners in the Cuban Missile Crisis, where 40 years after the fact, we learn that he and his brother agreed to remove strategically placed missiles in Turkey and Italy in return for a pledge from the Soviets to remove their missiles, although there's no on-site inspections built into this agreement. We demanded them, they refused, and there never were any. Many military experts believe in the end those missiles were never dismantled at all. But Khrushchev has no motive. I mean, this is Johnson's genius. people say to me, how could you get learned men on the Warren Commission to all lie? They all have to be lying. They have to be looking at the obvious and sticking to this cover story. Why would they do that? The reason they've done that is because Lyndon Johnson has persuaded them that it was the Russians. That 30 million people will die in World War III if the American people learn that the Russians did this to our president because they would demand retaliation. So you have to do this for your country. That he tells that fiction to Earl Warren to get him even to do the commission. Warren wants no part of this.
You're listening to some of the individuals who had information that have never been reported in the mainstream media, exclusively reported on WBAI, exclusively on this program. Quality information that pieces together the true picture of who was behind the assassination. What were their motives? What were their means? How did they do it? How did they cover it up? Every single stitch is brought together in this 8-hour CD set. We know who killed JFK. You've heard from two of the people. Reggie, please give the number. We're going to get some calls. $75 contribution to WBAI. And within 48 hours, I'm told by the station manager that you're going to get it sent out to you. So it's immediate. That is the new pledge. They've done a Herculean job. I commend all the volunteers, the members of the station board, Mitchell Cohen, the Andrea Katz, Bertrand Reimers, everyone who just really put the time in, their own time, to see that the listeners got their premiums, almost 5,000 premiums all told sent out. So we're very pleased about that. And these are going to be sent right out. And so call now so we can get you this set so you can start listening to this, sharing this information with people who care about the truth. And people who listen to BAI do definitely care about the truth.
All right. And the number once again is 212-209-2950. Once again, the number is 212-209-2950. You can get this package right now by calling 212-209-2950.
Now let's go back to another segment. We're going to try to get as many segments. I appreciate that they are short segments, but time does not permit us to go longer. I at least wanted to get you some of the individuals in here. So let's go to our next segment, please, Reggie. Hi, Vincent.
Oh, great to be here, Gary. Thanks to you and thanks to your audience.
Harry Truman once said that the only boss the President of the United States has is the Secret Service. There are strict rules not to be compromised for the protocol means by which the Secret Service protects the President. Please begin by detailing for us the agency's protocol for protecting the President in public and going clear back, especially in the 1960s when Kennedy was president, and what should have been the proper protocol, for example, protecting multi-story buildings, and then review us with us the changes in the standard rules that were made on November 22, 1963, when Kennedy's motorcade drove through Dallas.
Okay. Yeah, one needs to look no further back than the previous trip to Florida, which was 4 days before. And that was a model of great security in comparison to Dallas. Agents were riding on the rear of the limousine. That did not happen in Dallas. The military aide rode in his traditional position between the driver and the agent in charge. And yet in Dallas, for the first time, he was asked by the Secret Service not to ride there. The cars were going very fast in Tampa. I got this from several witnesses, faster than normal speed, anywhere between 40 and 50 miles an hour on certain parts of the procession. And in fact, Tampa was the longest motorcade JFK ever had in the less than 3 years he was president. And yet he comes to Dallas, and the cars are going dreadfully slow, and even slower than that during the assassination itself. Usually he had multiple motorcycles running next to the limousine in a wedge formation, not only the quality of the formation itself being right beside JFK, but the quantity of motorcycles. Now, this actually happened up to and including the morning in November 22nd in Fort Worth. He gets to Dallas, and as the hospital committee called it, it was a uniquely insecure uniquely insecure situation because the motorcycles were stripped down from four on each side down to just two on each side. In that insult to injury, they were moved further back behind the rear wheels. So basically, it was meaningless, the coverage. He was open to a crossfire, and they provided no coverage whatsoever. Okay. Now, this was a big discovery of mine in the last few years. It was basically right under my nose, and I didn't realize it until I looked at some newspaper archives and whatnot, that multi-story rooftops were guarded. And this was not just a reaction to the tragedy beforehand, or, you know, the tragedy at the assassination. This happened for years, actually going back to the FDR, Truman, and Eisenhower era, let alone the early Kennedy era. And this stems from not only the protective survey report of the Secret Service that was released in the late 1990s in Tampa, and also personal interviews with several of the people involved in the protection of the president in Tampa. Again, that was the major stop before the Texas trip. But also, dredging the newspaper archives, I found that the multi-story roofs were guarded along President Kennedy's parades in Milwaukee, Paris, Nashville, Chicago. The list goes on. And obviously, that did not happen in Dallas. And for anybody out there that's in the minority that even displeased Oswald acted alone, well, if the roofs would have been guarded, at the very least, that would have prevented, they would have saw Oswald if you displeased it was Oswald. Obviously, a conspiracy with the, you know, the rooftops being guarded, it's that much better of a chance that they would have seen what was going on. In fact, when Kennedy came to Aliquippa, Pennsylvania, there was police with binoculars scanning the crowds. And oftentimes, they also were in the crowds themselves. Now, it was a combination of the police facing the crowd, the military facing the crowd, some branch of the military, usually the Marines, okay? And sometimes even the agents themselves were interspersed within the crowd. So that's why sometimes you cannot go by pictures and still, and even motion pictures to a point, because they only give you this small slice in time, and even still photo especially, because you cannot judge the speed and all the angles and whatnot. But even though the Secret Service had manpower issues, with being augmented by police and military and the local field offices of the Secret Service, they were able to adequately provide protection for the president. Now, finally, just a few more things. And I just mentioned about the police and military lining the streets, but it's not happening in Dallas. Okay. The overpasses are supposed to be clear of spectators. That did not happen in Dallas. Okay. The special agent in charge or his immediate assistant always accompanied the president when he left Washington, D.C. That's Jerry Bain or Floyd Boring. He gets to Dallas, a third stringer, Roy Kellerman, is making his first major trip on his own without either Bain or Boring. And I always make the analogy for people. Imagine going to the Super Bowl and starting your third string quarterback. Dallas was a city that JFK was warned about by Senator Fulbright, Adlai Stevenson, and several other people. JFK even said, "We're heading to nut country." That's an exact quote. And yet, the Secret Service ostensibly found no threats to the president, something that Roy Kellerman told the Warren Commission was very unusual, and other agents I spoke to thought that was unusual. The common sense would dictate, because the rabid right-wing environment, the John Birch Society, Ku Klux Klan, the wanted for treason posters against JFK, and they find not one person had a threat or a grudge against the president. It's hard to believe. And White House photographer Cecil Stoughton normally rode in the follow-up car, and he was there in Tampa taking photos. He was pushed further back in the motorcade, again by the Secret Service. Dr. Berkley, the president's personal physician, normally rode in a car very close by the president, either in the lead car in front or the follow-up car behind. He protested at Love Field. The Secret Service put him far away. And this is a real stunner, because I think this is another thing that's like the multi-story roofs that a lot of people aren't aware of. Normally, a flatbed truck of still-in-motion photographers, UPI, Associated Press, etc., were there in front of the presidential procession, as they were in Tampa and countless other parades, filming. And sometimes even a live feed went out to television stations. There's a video in San Diego in June of local affiliates, they were pulling all their resources, ABC, NBC, and CBS, and they were having live video footage, black and white, of the motorcade. He gets to Dallas and, again, canceled the last minute by the Secret Service. Tom Dillard told the Warren Commission, who was a Dallas Morning News photographer, they were very dismayed. All the press and photographers were pushed further back at the motorcade, which, quote, put them totally out of the picture. And all those things, whether they were security-related or just coverage-related with press and photographers, that was all Secret Service decisions. And here's the clincher of all. Not only did the Secret Service break these protocols, and a lot of these things were unique to Dallas, they ended up blaming President Kennedy for these things after the fact. And then I found out through my years of research, contacting these gentlemen, that this was not true, that the president had nothing to do with these things. He did not order the agents off the car. He did not order the motorcycles away from his own limousine. Obviously, well, I say obvious, but this is based on my research. He had nothing to do with the press photographers and the military aid being pushed away. These, again, were all Secret Service decisions. You know, to quote Harry Truman again, not only did he say the Secret Service is the only boss the president ever had, he also said the buck stops here. And when you look at the Secret Service, you know, the security and whatnot, the buck stops with them.
Into greater detail about why the Secret Service's command did not investigate all of this. He did. He's interviewed more Secret Service personnel, done more of its research than anyone else in the United States. Yet you haven't heard of this man. We bring him in because it's a very important piece of the puzzle. What you're listening to, with only 10 minutes to go, is our final presentation, our final effort to offer, live today, a special premium, one that honors the integrity of truth that BAI and Pacifica have striven for so many decades, more than five decades. Even when it goes against the grain of consensus of mainstream media, even the corporate Democrats, you don't hear people on MSNBC touching this topic. They won't. But we do, because we're not corporatized, homogenized, plasticized, vulgarized. We still have the truth, even if we've been marginalized. And that's why we broadcast this. This is real scholarship. This is putting the pieces together. Could they have done it? Possibly. But they chose not to, because they know that this would go against some of the people who say, don't engage in these conspiracy nut job theories. Which part of this is nut job? Which part is conspiracy theory? All the documents we are presenting, all the people, are first-person accounts. No hearsay is allowed, and the evidence they present must be fully documented. Every single thing they're saying, we had documents, photographs, we had affidavits, we had everything in advance. This took nearly a year to present this information, pull it all together, so that you, the listener, can have, finally, the truth. The closest thing we've ever had to the truth was Oliver Stone's film, and you see how the vast majority of the media treat him and the film JFK. Well, that's just a fictionalized account, and he has the right to do anything he wants in a fictionalized account, but we have the Warren Commission, and that's what it is. This week, all across the internet, I have three different articles, all fully documented, that have gone viral. Between 100 and 120,000 different sites are carrying them, and some of these sites, like Global Research, are huge, with hundreds of thousands of readers. So the number of people reading these documents are in the multi-millions. Now, one of those was The Hidden Hand, the people behind the power scenes in the United States, the people who select before they elect the officials to higher offices, the people who control the media, the people who control the banks, the people who control our body politic. And it's time that we showed who these people are, how they function, and yet not a word of this in any of those other so-called media. We handled this. It's out there. Also, interesting, Rachel Maddow has mocked and ridiculed any discussion of fluoride. This is from pure ignorance, because one of the articles was about fluoride. And it's interesting to see the strings that go on to the articles of how many communities or organizers or social activists use the articles to get bills and laws passed to outlaw fluoridation. And using the science, the real independent peer-reviewed science from qualified individuals to argue their cases, and those have been upheld, and as a result, in hundreds of locations around the world. Fluoride is no longer part of the water supply because people have used this article, which we've continued to update for the past 20 years. It was originally called the Fluoride Fiasco, but every 2 months we update it with new science. And yet, on so-called liberal MSNBC, it's mocked and ridiculed. But so, too, was the indifference that was shown when I sent them the drugging of our children, as well as Gulf War syndrome killing our own, as well as the silent epidemic, as well as American veterans forgotten, betrayed, as well as the death by medicine and so many other multi-award winning, over 300 awards for these documentaries. And yet not a one was ever dealt with. No one was invited on to discuss it. So these are not progressives. These are corporate Democrat, limousine liberals, and I think that we have had enough of them. So you want the true people who care about our rights, our community rights, our civil rights, our individual rights? It's WBAI and its audience. We may be tiny. We may be considered irrelevant to the mainstream. We may have been marginalized by them excluding us, but we're still alive, and we're still capable of disseminating critical information that everyone else won't touch. It's kryptonite to them. It's truth to us. Give a call now and get this 8-hour, 8-part series, CDs, We Know Who Killed JFK. This is a major issue. And if the American media were to do its job right, it would review all these 8 hours, do independent interviews with all the people, examine their documentation, and then launch a national campaign to get to the truth. But we don't have an Edward Snowden. We don't have a Julian Assange. We don't have a Manning who is out there giving us information on this. These are tireless, you know, people who've done this on their own time, and we are now bringing it to you. Give out the number again, please, Reggie.
Once again, that number is 212-209-2950. For We Know Who Killed JFK, 8-CD package for a pledge of $75. 212-209-2950. This is your chance and opportunity to get this package, support WBAI, support WBAI on what we have been doing here for over 53 years. 212-209-2950.
We also spoke with people who were at the party or spoke directly with people who were at the party and then a meeting at the party. So there were all these other socialites, and then there was a group of people who went into a private room, along with those people, J. Edgar Hoover, Lyndon Johnson, the people who were part of this. For the first time, we find out all the people involved. We find out what they discussed, who planned what. It was all, for the first time, revealed in this series. And that was one of the people who gave us that insight, very important piece of information, was James Tague. So we have now the knowledge. And then what about the Warren Commission? Who was responsible for selecting the people to be on it? And then who selected the evidence and witnesses? And how did they manipulate all this? How did they get away with it? Who in the media was complicit, including someone high up at the Washington Post? We give you those details because one of the people who was killed was close to someone at the Washington Post and had revealed some information prior to her death. We have that information. We put it into the special. You have not heard this before. This took a year to put together. It's exclusive to WBAI. It's only $75. It's going to be sent out almost immediately to you. The package is beautifully presented with artwork and talking notes are all today, right, ready to go at WBAI. So let's give a final call. We only have 1.5 minutes left here. Right. Reggie, would you please give out the number again?
I will certainly. 212-209-2950. We know who killed JFK, an 8-CD package for a pledge of $75. You can do this by credit card, debit card, and call the call center, 212-209-2950, and support what we have been doing and what we will continue to do here at WBAI, supplying you information that you will not get anyplace else but WBAI. 212-209-2950.
And I'm, how are we doing there? Do we know if people are calling in?
People have been calling. It's been pretty steady ever since the beginning of the top of the last hour. It's been pretty consistent. I'm counting right now, maybe about 20, 25 pledges here.
That's terrific.
Yes.
Thank you all very much for supporting the station. We are the station that can and will be there for you. We're not the smarly ones. We're not the sold-out ones. We will not compromise on truth, ever. So it makes us kind of renegade. But we're happy with that moniker.
Right.
We can live with that.
Yes.
We can live with being independent thinkers who are not going to be compromised for a high-paying job on MSNBC or any place else. So thank you all very much. The 8-hour CD special, $75. We know who killed JFK, a historic, a landmark group of insightful individuals presenting information we have not hitherto had. Please call. Last opportunity. Reggie?
Thank you once again, Gary. 212-209-2950. Once again, for a pledge of $75, you can get this package, an 8-CD package here. 212-209-2950. For a pledge of $75, you can get Gary Knowles, We Know Who Killed JFK, an 8-CD package. 212-209-2950. Once again, thank you very much for Gary Knoll coming on for this additional hour. He did this on his own volition, and we appreciate that, and we appreciate his efforts of supporting WBAI. Once again, the number to support this station and to get the We Know Who Killed JFK 8-CD package, once again, the number is 212-209-2950.
There's no covered Christmases, and one's just a friend of smoked hams and warm bread and shiny toy trains. And though they've always been different, they've all been the best. Yet there's one I remember more tenderly than all the rest.
Began with Uncle Jack. He made a crack. I wouldn't take it back. Dad was a trick. I can repeat this right along and on, but...
As free as a mountain bird, his energetic fist should be ready to resist a dictatorial word.
Yes, hear Uncle Sidney sing Gilbert and Sullivan hits on his fire escape. Yes, hear Uncle Sidney on his program, Saturday Morning with the Radio On. Yes, Saturday Morning on the Radio On, which is on alternate Saturday mornings at 5 a.m. Yeah, you heard right. 5 bleeping a.m. in the morning when everybody's asleep. So be one of the special few to hear this program on WBAI and WBAI.org. You'll be glad you did.
Oh, his eyes should flash with an inborn fire. His brow should scorn with a ruff-la-la-la-ya-cha-cha-cha-da-ya-cha-cha. And this should be his customary act.
No, no, you suck!
What? What? Hey, I'm thinking up here. Oh. Be there.
We must change our attitudes, our minds.
We have to learn to tolerate each other.
America is a fundamentally good country. We have good people with good values who want to do the right thing.
We often get on with the job. We don't always talk about it as much as men.
It's not even about ideas anymore. It's not even about ideals anymore. It's just teams. It's just the Red Sox and the Yankees. It's just hatred.
We have to learn to put up with the fact that some people say things that we don't like.
Stop trying to force a government shutdown.
It does not have to happen.
Let it end! Please!
All of this is entirely preventable.
We live by one rule and one rule only. Never again will we allow ourselves to be put in such a position.
Tune in for A Shortcut, 11 p.m. New Year's Eve, right here on WBAI-FM.
I swear it by the All Gods and you, we will take no vengeance.
WBAI in New York, 99.5 on your FM dial, streaming at www.wbai.org. Please stay tuned for the next hour, coming to you live from the Cornelia Street Cafe.
Well, actually, that's something that's going to go on this morning at 5 a.m., so... And after I've figured out the Station Playlist Studio software that we have here, but, oh... Let's see, with, 3 minutes to go. Now, you see, and here I thought that was going to be Harvey Pekar talking. Let's see, uncheck this, uncheck that. Yeah, check this. This is what I want to play. I want to play that. Let's see if we can get it to go, shall we?
When you think of the golden age of radio, you're bound to remember the performer whose hold on the heartstrings of America spanned almost three generations.
Well, thank you, Jack. Yes, it's Max Schmid, and I'm your host for the golden age of radio. Sunday nights at 7 p.m. here on WBAI, presenting the finest in radio's history, comedy, drama, mysteries, science fiction. Won't you join me Sunday nights at 7 for the Golden Age of Radio? Only here on WBAI New York, 99.5 FM.
I hope you feel that way too.
I'm Michael G. Haskins.
I'm Bob Henley.
We've launched Haskins and Henley Drive Time for the 99%.
Let's be generous. Drive Time for the 99.5%.
For us, labor and the environment are the A stories.
But we need your help to keep telling these stories your stories.
One way to do that is to become a WBAI buddy for only $10 a month.
Support WBAI 99.5 to the right of NPR on the dial and to the left on everything else that matters.
This is Harvey Pekar, and you're tuned to WBAI, listener-supported radio in New York. Is that okay? What, do you want me to do a bunch of them?
Oh, alas, it's too late now, Harvey. But this is still, nevertheless, WBAI in New York City, listener-sponsored non-commercial Pacifica Radio, broadcasting at 99.5 FM. And the previous program with Gary Null and Reggie Johnson was brought to you on recording. Don't know where Robert was, can't say. Hope everything is fine and okay. But, well, I'm sure everything is fine. Not with me, but hey, that's okay. I don't go on for another 5 seconds or so. Oh, it'll have to do. Good morning. This is Hour of the Wolf, a weekly program dedicated to science fiction, fantasy, enchantment, and the imagination. My name is Jim Freund. This morning, Dan Persons, reviews The Desolation of Smaug, Hobbit the Second, and we'll hear a short story after that. Stay tuned. Thank you.
I'm Dan Persons, movie reviewer for Hour of the Wolf. And I wonder if there's going to be blowback for me on this review. The general consensus on The Hobbit, The Desolation of Smaug in the mainstream press could best be described as cautious optimism. Not really good, not yet, but things are getting better narratively in Middle Earth, so there's cause for hope. But we're not mainstream here. We're our own little tribe bringing our own specialized tastes to this film, valuing here what may be easily dismissed by the general public. My colleague, Lawrence French, was over the moon about Smaug, feeling that director Peter Jackson had taken J.R.R. Tolkien's simple tale of a humble but resourceful little hobbit who helps a team of dwarves regain their kingdom and added emotional depth to the characters and epic scope to their world. Larry loved it so much, he granted the film the rare honor of a 5-star rating. And sorry, I'm not going to be joining him in spraying stardust all over The Hobbit, The Desolation of Smaug. Yes, it is better than the first film. There are a number of bracing sequences here, a battle with giant spiders, an escape sequence that manages to incorporate a trip down a river in barrels, along with bow-wielding wood elves fighting off an army of orcs. And, of course, there's the event we've all bought in for, the encounter of Hobbit Bilbo, played by Martin Freeman, with the dread dragon Smaug, voiced by Benedict Cumberbatch, realized as a stunningly beautiful CG-animated character. That leads into the battle between the monster and the dwarves to regain their kingdom, a sequence which is incredible, until it isn't. More on that in a minute. Even the high frame rate projection system, the process that screens this film at twice the frame rate of a normal film, goes down easier here, although I can't precisely say whether that's because they figured out ways to smooth out the harsh look that seems to accompany the process, or if I'm just getting used to it. It's still not great, but it is better. But that's my attitude towards Desolation of Smaug. Overall, there's a great, dazzling, epic adventure film here, bloated out to create this needless trilogy. Once upon a time, there was a Peter Jackson who said, "You know what? Tom Bombadil is really extraneous to the telling of The Lord of the Rings. We can cut him out." That Peter Jackson no longer exists. He's been replaced by one who apparently will take any tangent to pad out his screen time, throw in extraneous characters and backstories while giving his main characters, including the Hobbit of the title, short shrift. The dwarves, weirdly for being among our focus characters, wind up being reduced to an undifferentiated band, save for their leader Thorin, played by Richard Armitage, and the unusually undwarf-like Killy, played by Aidan Turner. And thank God for him, because it would be horrible for Evangeline Lilly's elf warrior Toriel to develop a crush on one of the more normal-looking dwarves, like the guy with the Dairy Queen whipped hair. And then there's that main event, the encounter with Smaug, and what Peter Jackson decides to do with that, which I can't describe in any detail because it's kind of a plot spoiler. I can only say that if you get invested in this sequence as I did, you may be leaving with a bitter taste in your mouth. I actually got out of the screening and texted to Facebook, "Does Peter Jackson hate me?" Best take on it is that I think Jackson is setting up for the final film out next year to be really kick-ass, and maybe it will all come together. Right now, I feel a little abused, a little bored, and wishing I was as taken with the magic of this return to Middle-earth as others may well be. Your mileage may vary, but for me, The Hobbit, The Desolation of Smaug is still not worth the trip. I'm Dan Persons. If you love fantastic film, please check out Cinefantastique Online over at cfqonline.com.
Well, sorry about the bizarre mix, but that's the bizarre equipment here at WBAI. I double-clicked to have that music start at the same time as the review and way under. And then all of a sudden, about 90 seconds in, it comes on at full blast. Not what I had intended, but, well, there you go. The music, however, by the way, is called Smaug. Extended version. It's from the soundtrack of the motion picture you just heard reviewed. One thing, I haven't seen the film yet. One thing that I am curious about, last time out when seeing Hobbit the First, I saw it in IMAX 3D, and I could not tell anything about this 48 frame per second deal. And I'm wondering if the IMAX version has that as well. Not quite sure about that. I must say that I didn't care. I've seen the movie again on my 40-inch monitor at home. And the IMAX is lovely, but as far as the 3D is concerned, it did nothing for me. Know nothing about how well it's handled in this film, how extraneous. This time, maybe I'll try the 48 frame per second. I'm waiting for whatever to die down. Actually, I had the thought of going on my birthday, but, one of the people in my party, Ms. Adler, has already seen the film, so, well, we'll just go on our own. At any rate, I should point out, as long as we're hobbiting and smogging in the background right now, and by the way, there is no smogging in the studio, I should mention. I quit smogging about 10 years ago. Next week on Hour of the Wolf, our annual, almost annual, broadcast of The Council of Elrond, produced by David Marks, Margot Adler, and myself, Jim Freund, and read by Baird Searles. And I have to say, in my 40-umpteen years of working at WBAI, it is one of the things that I have done, albeit in 1971 or 72, of which I am the proudest. Searles' reading is just incredibly good. And we worked very, very hard on it the same way. It runs about 92 minutes, which is a problem, by the way, for a 90-minute show. But Lister has very graciously allowed me to run over by about 10 minutes next week, and therefore we will be able to bring it to you. So tune in next week at 1:30 a.m. New York time, assuming you're listening on the internet or through some other special technology, for The Council of Elrond, which, in case you don't know, by the way, is Chapter 2, Book 2 of Volume 1 of The Lord of the Rings. Lord of the Rings is never intended to be a trilogy. It was supposed to be one novel in 5 books and a few appendices, and that's what it comes down to. Let's see, other announcements. A forewarning, a foretelling, that January 7th at the New York Review of Science Fiction Readings, our readers will be Jen Brissett and Sam J. Miller, who are actually both once on this show together, because Jen